Welcome to a special Pest Central limited series celebrating the 50th anniversary of integrated pest management. This collaborative effort focuses on the history and future of IPM in the North Central region and features university faculty and agency staff interviews from around the region. This work is supported by the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture and the North Central IPM Center. This podcast is edited and produced by Michigan State University Extension. MSU is an affirmative action equal opportunity employer. Michigan State University Extension programs and materials are open to all.
Happy 50th anniversary, IPM, from Ohio State University.
Happy 50th anniversary, IPM, from Ohio State University Extension. Hello all, I'm Amanda Doritas with Ohio State University Extension as the Agriculture and Natural Resources Educator in Madison County, and I'm joined by Jim Jasinski. Jim, could you introduce yourself for us?
Sure, Amanda. I'm Jim Jasinski, professor in the Department of Extension, and I also coordinate the IPM program here at The Ohio State University.
Thanks, Jim. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in IPM.
Yeah, so my story goes back quite a ways. In 1993, I started with Ohio State in the IPM program, working on field crops. My job at that time mostly consisted of scouting and monitoring corn and soybean fields for key insect pests during different parts of the season. I was involved in many trials at the Western Ag Research Station in South Charleston, doing evaluation of insecticides for cornworm control, bean leaf beetle, black cutworm, seed corn maggot, and other pests. Around 1996, the first transgenic BT field corn hybrids were released to universities for evaluation against caterpillar pests. At that time, primarily European corn borer, which was a significant pest in the Midwest. BT is an abbreviation for Bacillus thuringiensis, a common type of soil bacteria that produces proteins that are insecticidal to certain groups of insects, in this case, caterpillars, which feed on the stalks of corn. We had trials comparing BT and transgenic hybrids from several companies that you might recognize, like Monsanto and Northrop King. We looked at their BTs compared to their non-BT isoline. That just means the same hybrid, just minus the BT gene, and against other conventional hybrids to observe any differences between the hybrids in terms of caterpillar control or amount of damage. In some trials, we would plant both types of the hybrids, BTs and non-BTs, and hope for natural infestations of European corn borer, which would give us data to show how effective the BT hybrids were in terms of protecting against caterpillars. But we would also buy European corn borer larvae from a lab in Minnesota and actually have them shipped to Ohio and then take them out of the box and put them in the field, put them on corn plants to boost the pressure and hopefully see evidence of stalk boring and then plant protection in these artificial infestations.
You were right in the middle of all this BT development. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was, at the time, it was just like one more trial to get through by the end of the day. But as it turns out, looking back, you know, almost 30 years, it was quite something. So yeah, to be involved with it, I was, just something that I never thought would be kind of a milestone in my career, that it was a big shift in ag and plant protection, but it really was.
So what's been happening since then?
To evaluate the damage during the different stages of corn development, we would harvest the entire plants by cutting them at the soil line and then splitting them lengthwise from the lower stem up to the tassel to document the number of stalk cavities and caterpillars, which would roughly translate into the level of plant protection offered by the BT trait compared to its non-BT isoline or conventional hybrid. So since 1996, many BT genes have been identified and placed into corn hybrids for control of not only caterpillar pests like European corn borer, but also corn earworm, fall armyworm, western bean cutworm, and also corn rootworm larvae, a whole different group of insects, which are also major pests of corn. So some of the BT introductions have worked well in controlling these key pests, Some traits have slowly lost their efficacy over time due to increasing resistance, and some BT traits have had area-wide failures across regions of the North Central states.
Thanks, Jim. Do you care to explain some of the examples about the failures? It was just traits that didn't provide protection. What happened there?
Yeah, those were mostly the corn rootworm traded field corn hybrids that over in Illinois and parts of Iowa, they had planted large acreages of certain hybrids with certain traits, and even under rotation, the corn rootworms overwhelmed the BT, and we had lots of lodging and lots of losses in those areas. In Ohio, we really haven't seen that. We just don't have the acreage, I think, that they have out west. And thankfully, we just haven't really had those failures here. But it's possible. But hopefully, again, we won't see that.
All right. So can you share more about what our colleagues at OSU are working on in the area of IPM?
Sure. So we have many faculty here at Ohio State who are currently involved in BT-related projects. One example would be, for the past 5 years, Ohio State has participated in an international effort led by Dr. Galen Dively at the University of Maryland to evaluate corn earworm resistance against several BT events that are in sweet corn. And corn earworm, you know, is the key pest to manage in sweet corn during silking. It is often the pest that drives the spray schedule, so it's very important. Corn earworm is, you know, got a lot of common names. It's also called the cotton boll worm or the tomato fruit worm, and it can be exposed to large amounts of BT pressure from various host crops such as cotton and field corn all the way into the southern states. So corn earworm does not overwinter here in Ohio. So this pest migrates in the state each year, and it's transported on weather fronts from the Gulf states like Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. So if the moths arrive in Ohio around the time sweet corn is beginning to silk, any BT resistance that this pest developed in the south may show up and cause unexpected ear damage when these migratory moths are deposited across the Midwest, not just Ohio. So in general, our results would suggest that several BT traits such as the CRY1AB or the CRY2AB2 and others found in commercial sweet corn hybrids are no longer highly effective at controlling corn earworm and are not recommended for use unless the grower intends to treat the BT sweet corn with a timely insecticide application during silking, just like a conventional sweet corn hybrid. You know, as of, you know, the taping of this podcast, only attribute two type sweet corn hybrids, and they have this VIP or VIP3A gene, should be considered highly effective against corn earworm and most of the other caterpillar pests.
So do they have some effectiveness still, or, and that's why they can be paired with an insecticide, or are they pretty much non-effective?
Yeah, when you compare them to a control and untreated conventional hybrid, you see some levels of control, but it really depends on the earworm severity or infestation. If it's a light infestation, you see a greater separation between like an untreated BT and an untreated conventional, but under high pressure, they look just about the same. You can get upwards of 80 to 90% infestation of the ears. You know, so there's really not a lot of separation there. So they just have really lost their efficacy under of many of the caterpillars, especially under the high pressure.
And is this something that's widely known among sweet corn growers, or are you guys still working to get the word out?
Yeah, well, we have, you know, meetings in the winter, we have reports that we write, and we do other kinds of outreach events where we talk about this and try to publicize it. But I think it's fairly well known. It doesn't take many fields of BT sweet corn that are infested with earworms to realize that it's just not working as good as it used to and ask the question why. So yeah, I think we're doing a pretty good job on both the research and extension fronts, talking about which of these BT sweet corn hybrids is effective and which ones aren't. So hopefully growers are tuned into that channel and are getting that message.
Great. Yeah, that's a good point. They're not hard to miss, that's for sure. So, where can folks learn more?
Yeah, so if growers or other people are interested to learn more about the BT hybrids or their current recommendations for either a field or sweet corn, I would say just seek out the researchers and the extension educators, in state at your land grant university who have been conducting these evaluation trials on transgenic crops or have firsthand experience working with these crops. Likewise, you can search online for past reports posted by other land grant universities. I would just say if you're going to look for information online, just make sure the website, the fact sheet, the bulletin, the journal article is a trusted, non-biased source of information. There's lots of information out there, and not all of it is 100% accurate.
Well, thanks for your time, Jim, and your dedication to working in IPM.
Well, thanks, Amanda. I really appreciate chatting with you about this.
Thanks for joining us to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Integrated Pest Management. Check the show notes for resources mentioned in this podcast, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes.